for the touch of your lips, dear, but much more for the touch of your whips, dear. You can raise welts like nobody else as we dance to the masochism tango.
Okay. Tonight on the show, we just don't dig on funerals, man. It is the 1979 Fever Dream 90-minute classic, Phantasm. Hillary is joining us from her South Carolina location.
Hey, howdy my ghouls, gays, and theys.
Love
it. Back in South Carolina.
Yeah, love it, love it, love it. We had a lost episode. We did The Descent.
And it was so good.
But apparently, and I'm just going to go on ahead and blame Mercury being in retrograde for all of this, the computer did not record, even though it was registering that our voices were going up and down. I spent at least an hour of my life when I got back from the trip going over my files to see if there was some semblance of an episode. No. So, we will revisit that at a later date.
Oh, such a great episode. And it was in person and my dog was good.
It was great.
There was howl laughter, and there was a Hillary's hot take at the end.
And literally all we got from that episode was, "You're such a good dog." And that was it.
"You're such a good boy."
That's literally
such a good boy this episode.
That is literally what was recorded, and then nothing. So,
you should just post it.
Yeah, I know. We should really just post that. Okay, so I have to know, when you saw this movie first, what prompted you to watch this movie? I have a very like personal background with this, so I would love to know like what your background is with this.
My sister actually, she came home, couldn't have been from a theater, so it must have been Blockbuster. But she came home, she told me that she had just seen this movie at a party, whatever, and she introduced me to it. And she was obsessed. She thought this movie was like the coolest. She has always wanted a Phantasm ball.
Of course. Of course. Who didn't? I challenge you to watch this film and not want a fucking spear, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So every time like I kind of go to like a, you know, convention or whatever, it is in the back of my mind to like, and not like a cheap, you know, $2.95 plastic, what, like somebody who like really fucking made one.
Yeah, absolutely.
I keep my eye out because I think that would just be like a cool sentimental gift for my sister, is to actually find the Phantasm ball and give it to her.
Absolutely. I love that. So how old were you at the time?
I was definitely under 10.
Okay.
You know, and then I watched it, you know, more when then I could go to Blockbuster. Like, I rented this, like, a bunch of times of just like, oh, yeah. And, you know, did watch more of them, but not, this wasn't like Halloween or Hellraiser, you know, where I was watching them all, you know. This was kind of like let me grab one of these too. But I hadn't seen this, I mean, in years.
In years.
But I was excited, you know, when we were trying to find an episode to do, and, you know, we finally pulled out the old trusty spreadsheet.
Yeah, buddy.
And I was just like, oh my God, yeah, let's do Phantasm.
Yes.
I'm excited for that.
That's amazing.
But yeah, I hadn't watched it in a very long time prior to last night.
Yeah, I think it's been since I was about 22. So when I was 22, I was going through a breakup and I went to see Bruce Campbell sign autographed books at the Tampa Theater. He was signing copies of his If Chins Could Kill. And I went there and I saw this guy who looked a lot younger than myself. And, you know, and back then, like I said, man, 22, I was a fucking fox, dog. I lived in sundresses
still
and
are,
high
but...
heels. I love you so much. You're so
But
sweet.
I get it.
But yeah. So confidence out the wazoo, right?
Yeah.
So I went up to him. He was wearing a Joy Division shirt. And he
yes.
was wearing the Love Will Tear Us Apart shirt,
mm-hmm.
right? And I was just like, oh, well, interesting take on that. Whatever the fuck
yeah.
I said. And he was just like, oh my God, a girl is talking to me. And we struck up this conversation and I opened his book. This is the first time I've ever been real brazen with a dude. By the way, I opened up his Bruce Campbell book and I wrote my phone number.
Oh, I love this story. Fuck yeah.
And then he was like, and I said to him, I said, well, I don't know if you're going to call me, but here you go. And his best friend who was standing next to him goes, oh, he's going to call you. So he wrote his number on like a little sticky inside my book. So when I went to go get my book signed by Bruce Campbell was like, who's Jonathan? And I was like, that guy over there. And he was like, you work fast.
Yeah.
So we started hanging out, as the kids would say, and I find out he's, you know, between 18 and 19. So he's
Perfect.
Younger than me, right? And he invites me over to hang out with all of his guy friends, and
Ooh.
Everyone decides that they are obsessed at this point in time with Phantasm.
Okay.
I've never seen it. I was late to the party on this particular franchise. So I'm sitting there watching and they are spitting lines back and forth.
Oh, wow.
They're doing shit. I mean, it's great. Like,
it's
I gotta
a Rocky Horror Picture Show viewing. First viewing for you.
It really is, just to watch it through these guys' eyes, right? And then at one point, we're driving in the car and I'm sitting in the backseat just chattering away about horror. And he turns to his friends, who were all, of course, between 18 and 19 years old, and says, can you believe that we're having a conversation about horror with a hot girl? And they're like, no. So, needless to say, Phantasm shares a very special place in my heart. Because
love this.
At this point, I had been broken up with in a collect phone call, and I was devastated. And I really, you know, I needed to have somebody say that I was cool and hot at the same time, and I did. So Phantasm is a very special, has a very special place in my heart. And that relationship lasted, you know, maybe a week.
Right. It did what it needed to do. That's
absolutely.
It.
But, yep. But what is a very sweet kid, you know?
Wish you well, Jonathan from Joy Division.
That's right, sir.
If you're out there listening,
yeah. But I
well
remember.
Done.
But I remember watching Phantasm through these kids' eyes and just being like, "Oh my god!" Because they were just, like I said, shouting lines back and forth. They were doing the whole scene where they play guitar on the porch. It was great. So I was like, "This movie is really." Interesting. And then watching it as an adult with Slink, especially at 45, and understanding that this film is so layered and there is so much about grief and isolation and feeling like when a sibling grows up and leaves.
Mm-hmm.
It hit me in a whole other way this time. So I was really excited when you said, let's do this. And I was happy to revisit it. Like I said, 45-year-old eyes, it's a whole other movie.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. So we open and right off the bat, I love the fucking Phantasm in the red with the red writing and everything.
Yeah.
It's just, this film is very low budget.
Yes.
You know, but it makes the most of every single location. The acting is not bad, you know what I
no,
mean?
No, yeah, no, it as I watched it again, you know, at 46, there are definitely, you know, it's, you know, the effects are 1979 special effects, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But there are definitely like shots in here and tension building and not, you know, not it relied on its budget and its actors to carry things, and like the things that you can't necessarily buy of just having, you know, props. I'm not explaining this fucking well at
no,
all.
No, you are. No, you are, because what you're saying is essentially like if we did this today, there would be like 7,000 of these spheres and they would be CGI, you know, and
yeah.
It would be this whole thing. Whereas this movie takes, you know, the locations, like the mausoleum, for instance, is its own character.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yes.
You know, the mortuary is its own character. You know, and it's almost like one of the things I really like connected with is it's because it's kind of told through the eyes of this 13 between, you know, this pubescent kid, right?
Yeah.
Is that it's almost like a ghost story.
Oh, it's yeah.
It's like a ghost story that you're like, well, you know, you better go to bed because the tall man will get you.
Yeah,
you
the Slender Man.
Right. Yeah. So very, that's kind of why I like it. And I also love the fact that the film, even though there are other people in this movie, like you see people walking down the street and things like that, this film has a very isolated feeling to it. Everything feels like a ghost town. It feels almost like a Western in a lot of ways because when they're walking down the street, and this is Oakland, California. This is not, you know, we didn't shoot this in like, you know, I don't know, someplace like Iowa, for instance.
Yeah.
This is
Utah.
This is California, for God's sakes. But Coscarelli makes this feel very very much like a stranger in a strange world, like a lost. There's a feeling of loss in this feeling in this movie, and I love that. Like one of my favorite scenes is the scene where Michael is walking down the street and he sees the tall man, and the tall man is walking in slow motion, and Reggie is getting the ice cream out of the ice cream truck and the, you know, the ice steam. I don't know what the fuck that is. Smoke, whatever, is coming out of is coming out of the ice cream truck, and it's all done in this like very slow motion, and the tall man turns and looks at him. It's very reminiscent of an old Disney horror film. Yes, I said Disney horror film, called Something Wicked This Way Comes. It's very much of the, like, when Jonathan Pryce, you know, arrives with his weird circus and shit like that. If these kids seeing this, this like specter, this like this ghost essentially, and you know, it's death. You know, it's this fear of an adolescent of death. It's this fear of letting go of things that, you know, make you who you are, right?
Right.
Because if I'm not, you know, Jody's brother, Michael, and I'm not my parents are dead.
Yeah.
Well, who the fuck am I?
Right.
Right. Like I'm
well
just
done.
Lost.
Yeah.
I told you, man, this movie, I had a little bit, I really connected with this in a way that I didn't think that I was going to. So.
Yeah. That's heavy for, you know, for Phantasm. Well, fucking done.
Okay, so
that's
so
the episode, guys. Watch it.
I know. Sorry, that's it. Cut. Print. We're done. Yeah, that makes up for last week. So we open on a graveyard with this less than attractive blonde having sex in a purple dress, mind you, with
less than attractive guy
with fabulous purple eyeshadow, and it looks like she's having sex with a member of Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Yes, very much so.
He has the fucking Yacht Rock mustache.
Yeah, that is going on. We've got a big old mole.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The forehead action.
Oh, God. And then all of a sudden, she just pulls out a knife and stabs him to death.
Yeah, with her one tit.
With her one tit out. Yeah.
Covers her tit. You get one tit in the movie. That's it.
That's it.
She's covering the left. And stabs him in the heart with a knife.
And the
but let him come first, which I thought was very generous.
That was very generous. And then when her face changes, you see her face has changed into this old man, and you're like, what the fuck is happening?
What kind of movie is that?
Yeah, absolutely. So
who's that guy?
The next day, we are at Morningside Cemetery, and we see, we meet our main characters. We meet Jody, and we meet Reggie. And it's very interesting, because this movie is written very simply. You know, like, everyone, no one's like, hey, man, what's up? Everyone's like, hi, Jody. Hi, Reggie.
Yes. Yeah, every, you know, you get your names real quick. How everybody's connected is real spelled out for you.
Oh, very much so. It's like, isn't that odd that Tommy died of suicide? And I'm like, thinking, really? Did Tommy stab himself in a cemetery post-coital?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Were his pants down at the time? How did this happen? Right, yeah. So they're like, yeah, it's really weird. It's like, oh, weird way to end a trio. So you know there are musicians.
Yep.
Or just three guys who are best friends, either way. And so we kind of learn that Jody has come back into town after leaving.
Yeah.
And if I had to hazard a guess on Jody's age, I would say he's somewhere in his 20s. Whereas Reggie has looked the same age from fucking Phantasm 1 to Phantasm 5. Like, always looks like he's 42.
Yeah. But probably is supposed to be 25, but looks like he's 42.
But they,
so yeah,
they,
Reggie they, is ageless.
Yeah, they essentially look like seriously, like members of a yacht rock band. Like,
yeah,
here comes...
they really are Crosby, Stills, and Nash. That's yeah, it's they named these characters incorrectly.
So Jody, you know, Jody says, hey, I'm gonna go see someone, right? And he's essentially referring to his parents who have died, who are located inside of this mausoleum. And he goes inside this mausoleum, and they couldn't film inside an actual mausoleum for obvious reasons. So this was actually built in a warehouse. The house itself is an actual place that is located in a park where you can go if you are in fact in the Oakland, California area. You can go and visit it. But the actual mausoleum is a set, essentially, and one of the only sets that is in the film. So there's this, yeah, he's going in there and he hears these weird, like, gurgling, snarling sounds.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck is that? You know?
The film
very much feels like a fever dream.
Very much. Yeah. There is a whole lot of like, wait, what is that? What's going on? Yeah. Very, you know, things happening off in the background and just like nothing is really like jumping out at you for a while in this. Like, you are left of your own devices of thinking and your brain is trying to make sense of a lot of things. And so I think that's why, like, so much is given to you of just like, oh, we were a trio. My parents are dead. This is my brother. This is my best friend. Because everything that's happening in the background is just like, what? You know, it would, too much would be left for interpretation if it was.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine if this was, you know, when the big reveal happens at the very end of the movie, like, I can imagine somebody watching this without the big reveal and going like, this is ludicrous. Like,
yeah, this is crazy.
This is just preposterous, if you will. Like, so we see our main character, Michael, and he is, you know, like your average 12-year-old ginger kid barreling through the cemetery on a motorcycle. Now, question. Are you allowed to do that?
No.
Okay. I didn't know if that was like, I mean, because that's kind of, I don't, it's not sacrilegious. It's the other one. No.
It's frowned upon.
Definitely
should not be riding a moped over graves. Yeah, no. That's, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So the way they shot this, by the way, is they actually shot this in a park, and they built little, you know, they built little cemetery, they built little, you know, headstones to
Yeah,
do the
on
scene.
top.
So,
Yep.
yeah, which was shot somewhere in there in outskirts of Los Angeles. So, Jody feels a jump scare hand on him. And he jumps and looks up, and it's the same old man from the cemetery, who gets a nickname in this film. Like, he doesn't really have
Have a name.
and
Yeah.
what's, I like the fact that he's literally called the tall man. Like, that's his,
That's the character.
yeah, very
In
much.
credits. Yeah. If you want to
Yeah.
know what that is, he is the tall man.
And so Michael is crouched down in the cemetery with his binoculars, and he's watching the tall man hand carry
Yep.
with just like it's nothing
Like it's nothing.
a casket.
Yeah, Tommy's casket, and
Tommy's
Tommy
casket.
was not a little guy.
No, he was definitely the Crosby of the Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Yes. So he is just manhandling Mr. Crosby, picks him up, and like throws him into the back
Into
of the
the back
hearse.
of the hearse. Yeah.
Yep.
And so you're like, what the, you know, is there so we see this really like weird house where Michael goes to, you knock on the door, and this blonde who has a star right below her left eye
Yeah.
answers the door, and he says, you know, hey, you know, is your grandmother here? And she's like, yes, she's inside. And he goes into this sort of what looks like a fortune teller's room, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Definitely. Like if you pulled over on the side of the road and it was just like, palm tarot reading today, $5 special. And yeah. And then Ozzy Osbourne shows up.
Yeah, just like Tiffany, there's like Tiffany lamps everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, and they show her, and she literally looks like someone's like elderly Italian grandmother. Like, she's wrapped in like the black shawl, you know, like we just want to call her Nona, you know.
Yep.
And
And
he
she looks like
she
Ozzy
looks like Ozzy Osbourne,
Osbourne.
and he basically, you know, he says, I'm. There's this kind of cut back and forth, right? So, like I said, the film has a very dreamlike quality, very similar to how I felt watching Alice, Sweet Alice. Is Alice, Sweet Alice has a very dreamlike quality, has a very shot through the eyes of a child kind of a thing. And, you know, when we think about the dreams we have as kids, they
Yep.
are disjointed. They
Yes.
are all over the place. They do not follow a linear timeline. So we get this back and forth of Jody talking to Reggie about how Michael follows him everywhere he goes. You know, very much like he's like, well, you know, he's following me everywhere he goes. I think he knows I'm going to leave again.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. And then the grandmother says, you know, I love the acting in this, by the way, just because I can actually do this. hold on. Get my old school Christy Swanson voice on.
Bit
Right.
nice.
Right. Grandmother has told you before, if he does leave, he'll take you with him. So, yeah, and that's exactly what happens. Like, he tells, you know, the grandmother is like his psychic spiritual advisor.
Yep.
And then he leaves, and oh, but then
No,
there's
yeah, the
oh,
box.
the
Yeah.
box, right? So they tell him, they're like, put your hand in the box. And he's like, what?
Yeah. Just a
Like,
long rectangular black box. Looks like a pencil case that you would have gotten to go back to school in,
Yep.
1984. Yeah.
Yep.
And
But
just
yeah.
put your hand in it.
Yeah, just put your hand in it, and the little blonde girl is like, "Don't fear. Don't fear, Michael. Put your hand in the box." And 'cause I mean, he's even said, he's like, "It hurts, it hurts, it
It
hurts,"
hurts.
right?
Like
Right?
it sounds like something clamps
Oh
onto
yeah, it's
him.
like, is
Yeah.
there a monster in the box?
Right. So like something, and I think it's supposed to be kind of reminiscent of like those Chinese finger traps when you put your fingers in
Right.
and then you can't pull them out, and the
Pull them
more you
out.
fight it, the tighter it gets kind of thing.
Exactly. Because they're telling him, they're like, fear is the real killer, is what they
Yeah.
tell him. Fear is the real killer. Don't fear. And then
Don't
he
fear.
yanks his hand out of the box and runs away.
Runs out.
And
so, okay.
Grandmother and little 70s blonde have a happy old chortle. Yeah. They're just like, ha, ha, ha. And which makes me wonder, you know, it's like, well, were they fucking with him?
Yeah,
like, because he paid the money. Like, that's the thing is, he paid the money to get this, you know, psychic advice, right? Because he's confused about the fact that his brother has to leave again and he doesn't understand. And he looks up to him and Jody.
And his parents are dead. So who is taking care of him?
Right. His parents are dead. And Jody even says to Reggie, he's like, yeah, man, I'm thinking of just sending him away to his aunt. And I'm like, well, I would think so at this point.
Like, yeah, like, somebody should be raising this 13-year-old boy. Like,
who the fuck does he live with?
Right. Like, what town is this that they're just like, oh, okay, Jody went away, is touring on the road with Crosby, Stills, and Nash. So Michael just lives in the Brady Bunch house by himself?
Yeah, I know.
Visits the psychics for advice on how to grow up and how to live?
With fantastic shag carpet.
Yeah.
Can we talk about 1979, this house? Okay, so the outside of the house is very 70s, very 80s style. You know, has the driveway, has everything. And then inside the house, it is wall-to-wall wood paneling.
Mm-hmm.
It is shag carpet.
Green and yellow and white.
It's just, oh,
it just
boy.
Looks like vomit.
Oh, yeah. It's autumn.
It's yeah.
It's a lot of fall colors. So here comes one of my favorite scenes. And it is absolutely, I still laugh at this every single time it happens. But you can kind of hear Jody playing guitar. And then Reggie jumps out of the ice cream truck, pulls the guitar out of the ice cream truck.
Yep.
And follows the sound of the music to the porch.
Mm-hmm.
Sits down on the porch and proceeds to join in on Sittin' Here at Midnight, which is which is the duo's original. We never learned the name of their band. But, no. You know, by the way, we don't know. But yeah, they're playing this. And it is literally like watching a yacht rock snippet. You know what I mean? Because they're just playing it and the guy and they're getting into it. And then in the middle of the song, they go, And then my favorite, Reggie takes a look at Jody and says, we're hot as love.
Hot as love, man. Which is should be a saying. I'm surprised that didn't take off.
I want that on a shirt. I want a shirt that says "We're hot as love." I love that so much. Right? Okay. So then we get this kind of odd scene where the little blonde girl from the psychic snafu walks into the mausoleum. She opens a door. She screams, and then we never hear from her again. That's it. By the way. That's all we pretty much know is that she's gone. Jody goes over to a funk music bar, which on the outside looks very much like a country western bar.
It's called like the Duke's Cantina or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Duke's Canteen.
He goes inside and they are playing like 70s porn music.
Yes.
Like it is like a bow, bow, wow. Like it is 100% that kind of music. And once again, the lady in lavender approaches him as she apparently approached Tommy at one point. And, you know, he says, oh, my house is this way. And she's like, well, this is quicker. And it's like, damn.
Let's go fuck in the cemetery, homie. That's my jam. That's what gets me off.
Okay, question. Because I've always wondered this, and I'm pretty sure you've answered this for me before, but I'm not sure. But have you had sex in a cemetery?
Mm-hmm.
You have? Oh, fucker. Okay, so you have had sex in a cemetery. All right.
Yeah.
When you were, you know.
15?
15? Yeah. So apparently this is just what this is what they do. So I also love the fact that every location seems to be within walking distance.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Because
everything is right next to each other.
The bar is right next to each other. The mausoleum is right next to that. The graveyard is right. He's just like, okay. He's
but
like,
then
well,
you get like these large sprawling scenes of green that it just looks like nothing is next to anything. But
like, no, they are getting in their cardio. There is a lot of walking in this movie, seriously. So Michael is following his brother at this point because he's you know, like I said, glued to him. He follows them to the cemetery where the lady in lavender proceeds to take her titties out.
Mm-hmm.
and Michael gets his jeans off and tidy whities. I swear to God, I'm glad that trope went away in male culture.
Glad to see a good boxer brief.
A good boxer brief, exactly. A good boxer brief. I really feel like that. Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand.
Whoever invented those, well done.
Yeah, good. Thanks for that. Yeah. So they're having sex, and meanwhile, Michael gets startled by a little person in a monk robe.
Yep,
that's exactly how we would describe it. Now, when I first, you know, like I said, when I first started looking into this into deep dive, I thought, oh, these are probably, you know, dwarves. These are little people, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're all children. Like every single
I honestly, same as you, I definitely thought, you know, little person for sure.
They hired a bunch of dwarves, right? Yeah, they, you know, but no, these are all little kids. These are kids in little brown robes. So of course Michael screams, which then alerts Jody, who's mid fuck, and he's like, oh my God, he's like, that's my brother, and he runs off and
with her panties in between his teeth.
I love that. And then comes back, and of course she's gone because, you know, her
who's waiting.
She was exactly. And we get that really cool scene where, you know, Michael's walking through the town and sees the tall man walking in slow motion down the street and then looking over, and then Reggie getting the ice cream out of the thing. And it's like, okay, it's so cool. It's very surreal.
Yeah.
You know, it's very surreal. So Jody returns to the disco bar, to find the lady in lavender, and, you know, the bartender's like, nah, don't know what you're talking about. Like, we were gonna fuck in the cemetery and it didn't work out. It's like, oh well, sorry.
She didn't come back here.
Sorry, partner.
Win some, you lose some.
Meanwhile, Michael's actually working on a car. Okay.
Yep.
I have high respect for anybody that has any kind of automotive skills, if you will. Anyone that is able to put themselves underneath a car, which this kid is under a car working on the car. I mean, I love that. I love that for him. I really do. And then one of the little minions comes over and kicks the
jack stand.
Thank you. Yes. Kicks the barbecue fork.
Yes.
Out, and boom, it lands on him and he's crushed and he's, you know, oh my God, he's just like that claustrophobic, can't breathe kind of situation. And Jody comes in and, you know, moves the car and is like, are you okay? You know, and he's like, you don't understand, there's these little things and they're chasing me and nobody understands. And it's that it's that anxiety as a kid of telling adults, you know, that you're scared or you're anxious or you're worried, and they just dismiss it.
Yeah.
You know,
and you're not going to understand. And what I'm saying doesn't make sense, but it's what's happening. You know, it's not, it doesn't seem like it's based in reality. Mm-mm. You know, like, I'm scared of this dog. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, you don't need to be like, I'm scared because there are these, you know, little brown monks terrorizing me. It's like, what are you talking about?
I keep seeing this weird guy walking around, you know, it's like,
yeah.
This before Stranger Danger, guys.
Yes, before Stranger Danger. And, you know, do you know where your kids are? It's 10 p.m.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are? So it's interesting because you and I grew up in the same decade. And you know, there was this this thing that happened in the 80s where children being kidnapped and or murdered was so rampant that we my parents specifically, I don't know about your folks, but my parents were like, I mean, it is we had a code word. No one's allowed to pick you up from school. You don't walk home from school. That's not a thing anymore. Just as kids, that was a, you know, and it was like, no, it was stranger danger. You know, what do you do if somebody approaches you? This is how my parents, my mother had a scenario worked out for everything, and she would act it out with me so that I knew what I was supposed to say, what I was supposed to do. And I know that for a fact the kids of today don't have this. They didn't have this like abject, absolute fear of everything around them. Like you raise kids. So, I mean, you guys have to worry about kid like people on the internet
I
or
mean,
Fortnite, you know.
chat rooms
Chat
and,
rooms, you know.
cell phones and, don't give anybody your address. Don't send anybody a picture that you wouldn't want me to see. That sort of stuff.
Such so different. It's just so fucking different.
Whole new world with all new problems of how people can hurt people.
Right. And then 78, 79, you know, young Michael just sneaks out of his house in the middle of the night to go do some recon at the mausoleum,
Well,
you
yeah,
know.
he's being raised by nobody.
Nobody. He
Why did
hides in a
he?
coffin, you know.
Like, he doesn't even have to sneak out. There's nobody in the house.
No, he like kicks open, he kicks, you know, kicks one of the windows open, you
Yeah,
know,
he breaks
crawls
in
through it
very loudly.
loudly, might I add, you know, which very much like what a child would do, right? Very much like what a kid would do. Like a kid would not be like, oh, we're gonna be delicate and quiet. Like the kid's like, I'm kicking this window open, man. So sneaks through the mausoleum and then gets menaced by the flying silver ball. And there's this man there who, once again, inexplicable.
I thought he was like the caretaker of,
I figured that he worked there in some way, right? Like
The
whether he,
hat is what gave it away for me.
right,
He's got a hat. He works
that
there. He's the caretaker.
he's one of the, he's somebody important at the mausoleum. So he grabs, you know, he grabs Michael and Michael struggles to get away. And then the silver ball latches itself onto this guy's forehead and drills a hole into it, and there's blood just like a
Blood squirts out the
fountain.
best.
It's so cool. And then falls down and pisses himself.
Falls down, pisses himself.
Fun fact, that pissing scene almost got this movie an X rating.
Really?
Can you imagine of
It
all
sounds,
the things?
of all the things.
Right. Not
The
the, not
urine is what did it.
the urine is what did it. And then somebody on the internet was like, well, you know, because we haven't seen that since. And I was like, Friday the 13th part two, Amy Steele's hiding under the bed and she pisses herself. Like, no, this has been done. It just didn't get an X rating for some reason. So the ball drills the hole, he falls down. The tall man is, you know, chasing him. Chasing poor Michael into another room. I love this because Michael slams the door on the tall man's hand and his fingers are
Are
just
just tapping.
tapping. They're just doing that, like, I'm waiting.
It
Tapping.
is not like a ouch, I'm in pain.
No.
Like the door is, slammed on my hand and I'm hurt. It's not my fingers are dead from this heavy ass door.
No.
It's a very rhythmic tap on
And
the
then
wood.
Michael sees this and he's like, oh my God. So he slams the door, you know, harder and the fingers come off and it's just this
No, he
like
knifes him.
yellow pus.
He
Oh, he
cuts
has
him
the
off.
knife. That's right. That's right. That's right. Aye. So he keeps one of the fingers and puts it in a little box.
Takes it back home, and the very next scene is Michael asleep on his shag carpet stairs with a shotgun.
Shotgun and like you know and un un
unloads it, right. Unchambers all the bullets. Yep.
All the bullets. And there's a lot of bullets in that fucking gun. Uh-huh. He's just so he's like, okay, so he's like, so you have something. And he's like, yeah, I have it in my little box. And he opens up this box and there's this finger in what is sitting in what looks like a pool of hollandaise.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I have a yellow applesauce.
Oh, okay, that's good. Yeah.
French's mustard and applesauce.
And Jody looks at the finger and is like, oh shit. Okay.
Yeah, and he goes, okay, I believe you.
I believe you. Let's go to the sheriff. So he's like, yep. Okay. So Michael goes into the other room, you know, to get his jean jacket that we see in him in a lot of. And he then looks in the box and he's like, wait, what? You know, and kind of looks for the finger, and the finger has turned into this furry fly.
This yeah, fly
monster
spider
yeah. thing. And so he traps it inside his jean jacket and starts fighting with it. Jody sees him fight with it. They're both fighting with it. They
get it to the garbage disposal.
They get it to the garbage disposal. I love it.
And
they
then in walks Reggie.
And then Reggie just walks in like it's any other day.
Yep. Hey, guys, what are we doing today? I need you to run recon.
That's literally what he does. He just stops by. What I love about the relationship between Reggie and Jody is that Reggie is up for anything.
Yes.
Reggie, for being the neighborhood ice cream man who's not a pedo, is literally, he is not only is he up for, you know, checking out this very fantastical, you know, scenario that they're talking about, but he's got Jody's back. He at yep. one point had Tommy's back, and mm-hmm. he in his heart of hearts knows that when Jody goes away, that Michael will become his responsibility. And yeah. he's okay with that.
Yep.
He's very okay with that. There really is this male camaraderie in this film. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not toxic masculinity, as it were,
yeah.
right? Very, very just chill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I was saying, I was like, why is there a guitar solo in the middle of this film? And Slink pointed out, he's like, because it's to point out the fact that these characters are very relaxed, they're very laid back, and that there's nothing to do in this town. Is that that's why Jody left. Because at one point, Jody sees his neighbor, they were like working on the car or whatever, the neighbor sees him and is like, what are you doing back in this shithole town?
Right.
Like, something to that effect. And he's just like, oh, you know, Tommy's funeral and you know, all that. And so there is literally nothing to do in this town. This is a dead end town, right?
Yes.
So that's the, you know, the whole the impetus behind them being as, you know, hey, yeah, man, I'm up for it.
Yeah.
Whatever. Nobody's smoking weed in this movie either.
Yeah, no, nobody's like the stoner burnout.
Nope.
You know, everybody's no. just like, yeah, there is a togetherness and brotherly love, you know, feeling to it
yeah.
of just, you know, we have decided we are friends, we are, and it's like we are just to end.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. It is very beautiful and
yeah.
not, it is not homoerotic in
no.
any sense of the term, you know,
no.
and again, we all know I wouldn't care if it was.
Absolutely,
but no.
yeah. We're all
this
about
is,
homoerotic,
yeah.
but
right.
no, this film.
This is just men that love each other.
Yeah. Yeah. This
which
is
very few and far between that you see that sort of connection of love and friendship.
Between men. Between, yeah, this. So, Jody, so Reggie walks in, right? And he then gets menaced by this weird creature.
Fly spider.
This
yeah.
fly spider that's coming out of the garbage disposal, which is good because then he's like, well, I don't know what the fuck's going on, but I'm going to help you.
Yeah.
Right?
Whatever we got to do. Yeah. We got to rid the world of these fly right. spiders.
So Jody and Reggie are like, okay, let's go do some recon. We're going to lock Mike in his bedrooms because, you know, he'll be safe with all that wood paneling.
Yeah. Obviously, that's the only logical thing to do at this point.
And then he escapes and opens the front door, and it's the tall man, reminding me very much of there's a lot of parallels with this movie and The Gate.
Very much so.
You know, that's just that like I'm a kid and nothing makes sense and things are very non sequitur. You know, like he opens the door, the tall man's there, and he's like, I've been waiting for you, kidnaps him, throws him in the hearse, you know, he escapes the hearse, then the sphere starts chasing him. Jody takes a shotgun and kills the sphere, which I love. It's just like, you know, done. And then we open the door. Somebody opens it. I can't remember if Michael opens the door or Jody opens the door. Somebody opens one of the doors of the mausoleum, and we see, and I'm on the fence about what this is, but I stole this from Wikipedia and I'm gonna read it. We glimpse through an interplanetary portal or wormhole, seeing a red hot world where the dwarves are toiling as slaves. And so, I
Yeah,
mean,
that's a perfect exploit. Whoever wrote that, well done.
thank you, Wiki, because
Yeah.
there's
There's
never,
just no way to explain this movie,
right.
really.
There's no explanation in this film. Like, you're not like, okay, they're not demons. Like in The Gate, they're demons. Right? Okay, but in this movie it's like, are they aliens? I mean, interplanetary, right? So like, are they spirits? Because one of the things that they do, and it's very subtle, is that anyone who dies becomes one of these little slaves. Dwarf slaves.
Somehow they shrink them down because they realize that one of the Ewok creatures is Tommy. It has Tommy's face.
Face. Yeah.
So yeah, the people that die become these Ewok slaves for the tall man to do his bidding.
Yeah. Exactly. So and who knows, you know? So then there's like there's a big fight, and the lady in lavender, aka the tall man, stabs Reggie, and then Michael wakes up and he walks out to the living room, and he finds out that Jody died from a car accident 2 weeks ago, and that this has all been a grief-induced nightmare. This has been his way of dealing with loss. It's his way of dealing with isolation, abandonment, death, grief as a adolescent kid.
As a 13-year-old kid who has lost his parents
And now
and
his brother.
now his brother. Now there is no one besides Reggie the ice cream man. And you know that moment of just like, I got you, like no matter what, like, and you know Michael is saying, you know, like it felt so real, you know, and Reggie's just like, we're gonna get through it together. That's
It's so beautiful, man. And like the fact that in this dream, this is the only place where you can defeat death. Right? It's like you can run away from it and you can do all of this stuff, but really this dream that he's having of him and his older brother, who he worships and thinks is the coolest person on the planet,
Coolest, yeah.
they defeat death together.
Yep.
Right? And there's something so sad and poignant about that. And then him waking up is his acceptance of it, is his
Yeah.
acceptance of death, is like, okay, I've lost my parents, I've lost my brother, and now, you know, but Reggie is just like, hey man, let's go on a road trip.
Yeah, guys trip.
Very yacht rock.
Yeah, very yacht rock. We're gonna start a band.
We're gonna get in this Chevy van, and we're gonna hit the road and pick up
Hit the
female
road together,
hitchhikers.
pick up bitches and become Bianchi and the
This
other
is
one.
and thus Bittaker and Norris were born. Yes, because heaven forbid I should have a poignant or sincere moment on this show.
Yeah, we had it, and now back to serial
Dude,
killers and show me your tits.
hey, we love our gallows humor around here. So the Then there, of course, there's a final little jump scare, which we'll allow you to watch. But you know, leading into there's the Phantasm 2, Phantasm 3, Phantasm Oblivion, Phantasm 5. And I have only seen I saw Phantasm 2. Phantasm 2 was an example of where Universal Studios got involved and they just ruined it. Like they basically said, like, we don't like Michael Baldwin, who played Michael. So we're gonna get a hot new actor. So Brad Pitt auditioned and almost got it. And then they finally decided on James LeGros. So James LeGros played Michael in the sequel. And the sequel was very, like, I remember when the trailer came out and it was just like, this summer, the ball is back, you know, and it was this, you know, thing or whatever, but it lacks the childlike wonder of the first one, and it lacks the
The
dreamlike
camaraderie,
quality, the
yeah, the
camaraderie.
surrealism,
Yeah.
the everything that makes Phantasm brilliant,
Right. Right.
aside from the ball. That was like
Exactly.
the one thing that they were
Right.
just like, we'll just fill it with balls.
And
That's what we're gonna
apparently,
do.
Angus Scrim was such an amazing human being that, like, on set, he was just a very kind person. He really enjoyed making the movie. There's, if you want to see, there's some YouTube footage of Don Coscarelli and Angus Scrim going back to these original locations and seeing, you know, different things, practicing lines together. And we lost him. It's been a while. It has been a while because, you know, Angus Scrim pretty much looked old in this movie. So, you know, but the origin story of Phantasm was because Coscarelli, as a teenager, had a dream that he was being menaced by a silver sphere that would chase him around. So he decided he was going to channel that and turn it into a film, which is amazing because fuck it, I can't do shit with my depression. So thanks for that. Good for you with taking a nightmare and making it a goddamn franchise.
Well done. Think your
Literally.
anxiety does nothing for you, kids? There you go.
There it is. And if the house that's used as the mortuary looks familiar, it was also used in a movie called Burnt Offerings with Oliver Reed. And it is also in So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Oh, that flick.
Interesting. Yeah. So one of the things that and that guys is Phantasm. Yes, Phantasm is awesome. We had such a great time talking about it, and I had so much fun watching it again, you know. I wanted to give a shout out because we did give a shout out to the Descent episode.
We did.
And we're gonna do it now. While I was in South Carolina with my lovely, lovely co-host, Miss Hillary, I got to go to an art pop-up and I got to meet this really awesome artist, both of us did, named Angela Allen, who is in the South Carolina area. She runs 3G Girl Studios. And we got some art. Hillary got some earrings.
Yeah, they're awesome. Gold and like tile at the bottom. And I normally do not wear gold, but they were gorgeous and I could not leave them there. And so, you know, they match all my like brown earthy when I my two styles right now are like, you know, punk rock alt girl and like boho western. Though that's where I'm at on my, you know, clothes journey, if you
Oh
will.
yeah, it's really amazing that we got to see all these little local artists. I bought like locally made soaps and stuff like that. So, but Angela Allen was nice enough to talk to us for a while, and we're giving her a special shout out. She is on Instagram under 3G Girl Studios, and you can find her, purchase some art, you know, support local.
Support local art, man. It's
Support
what makes the
local.
world go.
Love it. Now, do you have an idea for next week? I have an idea for next week, but I want to see
Your
if you
no,
have an
you
idea.
no, you your idea. I picked Phantasm. You're up.
Okay, society.
Love it.
Yeah, especially just with the state of the world right now, I feel
I'm
like
all over it.
society and its slime-filled orgy of consumerism is appropriate right now.
For sure.
So, as usual, if you want to find Manic Movie Monday, please do so on Instagram, because we are not really on anything else. Instagram's pretty much it. I'm not even on Blue Sky anymore. I tried to log into Blue Sky recently, and it was like, do you have your password? And I was like, I do not.
No.
So, bye-bye, Blue Sky. But yes, if you do want to follow us, Manic Movie Monday podcast. And also, if you would like to see a movie of your choice on our show, how can they do that, Hillary?
They can go to buymeacoffee.com and search Manic Movie Monday, and you can go and buy 5 coffees. And by doing that, you get to tip, support local art. And in that, if you buy 5 coffees and you want to hear your movie done in a manic style with Hillary's hot takes and Aaron's poignant pieces and all of that, let us know your movie, and we would love to do that. Helps us keep streaming services and Zoom going, and we greatly appreciate it. Love hearing from you guys. So that is buymeacoffee.com, search Manic Movie Monday.
And if you want to watch Phantasm, you can do so on Tubi right now. Phantasm,
shout out Tubi,
is on Tubi. I don't know if Society's on Tubi, but I'm going to give a shout out to that too, because I'm pretty sure that you can stream that on some service. I hope so. I pulled that one out of my ass on the spreadsheet. I was just like sitting there going like, oh shit, I hope it's streaming. God damn. So, all right, guys. Keep it here till next week. And as always,
stay manic.
That was good. I like that.